No matter how old you are, you've probably watched cartoons. Ever thought about the music that accompanies them? Sure you have. Current State's Melissa Benmark recently spoke to a noted musicologist about just that and joins us now. Hi, Melissa.
Mark, it was so much fun talking to Daniel Goldmark. He's the director for the Center of Popular Music Studies at Case Western Reserve University, and he'll be giving a talk at MSU's College of Music this Friday afternoon. We talked about some of the differences between quote-unquote serious film music and what's used in cartoons, and I started out by asking him what he'd be talking about when he's here in East Lansing.
In the 1950s, when animation starts really moving into television in a big way and out of the theaters, there's a change in the way that cartoons are made, not only how they are produced and the way they look, and this is what people think about when they think about Hanna-Barbera. Animation isn't quite so fleshed out. You see the repeated backgrounds and those kinds of things. These were all money-saving devices because they had to produce more shows for television than they would have for theaters. Musically, things change as well. And the kinds of music you hear and also specifically what music you hear changes pretty drastically. So the sound of cartoon music in the 50s and the 60s and the 70s and the 80s becomes associated with a particular look and feel. And then in the 1980s, when there's an animation renaissance, return to Warner Brothers and new shows are produced, there is also a return to the older sound of the 1930s and 40s. So in my paper, I'm going to be talking about the changes that happen when television gets big and what happens when people decide they want to return to the old ways on television.
One of the things about music for cartoons is that it needs to be funny. It forwards the funniness of the cartoon. What things make music funny?
It's hard to say objectively what makes music funny. It really does depend on context. In a classical piece, a bassoon can be as serious an instrument as possible. But then again, in Peter and the Wolf, it's actually used to bring a bit of humor to the grandfather, sort of this lumbering sound. And in the Warner Brothers cartoons, Carl Stalling, the composer for the vast majority of them, mentioned in an interview that he thought that he liked the bassoon. Does that mean he thought it was a funny instrument? Maybe, or maybe he just thought it was really versatile. Funny really depends on what's going on at the moment. That said, one thing that is distinctive about cartoon music is music very often will catch the action. That is, you'll hear music happening very precisely with something going on screen. In fact, it's so closely associated with cartoons, this practice, that it actually got termed Mickey Mousing because it was so prevalent in the early sound cartoons of the late 20s and 1930s. And it wasn't a compliment. Mickey Mousing was seen as something that you would do only in cartoons, but when people would do it in feature films, it was calling attention to the music in a way that producers didn't really like. And so it was seen as a crutch. But in cartoons, Mickey Mousing is what we expect. Every time someone moves their feet, we hear it musically. We hear it in sound effects. They're falling. We hear descending strings. And it telegraphs to us not only what's happening, but probably what's going to happen a split second before it does.
Which is funny because you watch so many movies and cartoons over the course of a lifetime. And yet, it had never crossed my mind that whereas, when Mickey Mouse takes steps and you hear the the violins do that, you never will see Luke Skywalker swing his lightsaber in time to the Star Wars music. That had never crossed my mind until I was preparing for this interview.
It's an old, I want to say it's an adage, but there's a longstanding belief that music should not call attention to itself in a Hollywood film. Aaron Copland wrote a sort of guide to what to listen for in classical music years ago. And when he talks about film music, he very famously talks about how it should be there, but only there to the extent that you barely recognize that it's doing anything. It shouldn't call attention to itself. It should never bubble up into the actual story unless music is part of the story, in which case it's a whole other, there's a whole other set of rules that apply.
There are some classical composers who seem to have really influenced the modern serious film soundtrack, Holst, Korngold. Who would you consider to be analogous to that in terms of influencing the people who did the soundtracks for maybe Looney Tunes. So not the people who actually did them, but what kind of music was influencing the real masters of cartoon music writing?
Scott Bradley, who wrote for MGM, and Carl Stalling, who started with Disney and ended up with Warner Brothers, are probably the two most influential cartoon composers of the 30s, 40s, and 50s, in part because the cartoons were so successful and popular. They listened to just about everything. Stalling and Bradley both lived in Los Angeles. Bradley was very, very happy about the fact that he lived in such close proximity to folks like Arnold Schoenberg, who also by this point lived in Los Angeles. Bradley was a fan of Bartok and some very modern composers. Stalling was a theater accompanist originally, and so he grew up, as it were, playing all of the light classics that you could imagine, and this is why the Looney Tunes are just filled to overflowing with Rossini and Fonsupe and the not-so-light classics, Wagner and Mendelssohn and whatnot. What you don't actually hear very, very much of is Beethoven or Mozart. That was still considered pretty serious concert fare only in the 30s and 40s.
Now, this is a long stretch, but then that crosses my mind. I have to ask if the making fun of Wagner had anything to do with the fact that his politics were Nazi-affiliated.
Wagner shows up in World War II cartoons occasionally. There's a really amazing one called Hare Meets Hare, where Bugs Bunny ends up in the Black Forest and runs into Hermann Göring. And there's a long sequence in there using the overture to Tannhäuser, which actually that entire sequence got redone very slightly for What's Opera, Doc? Probably the most famous cartoon to use classical music ever made. That cartoon is 13 years later, and from a different director. Hare Meets Hare was Fritz Freleng. What's Opera, Doc? Was Chuck Jones, and yet they both saw Wagner as a topic ready for ridicule. This was a big thing for Warner Brothers. Warner Brothers really liked to mess with classical music, either respectfully or really satirically, whereas other studios, most famously Disney with Fantasia, was trying to raise it up to another level of artistic appreciation.
Which is ironic because now to this day, if anybody mentions Fantasia, they don't mention the gorgeous music scenes. They mention the dancing hippos.
Right, exactly.
It seems like movies, music videos, and video games have got kind of an intersection, and that's got to be changing the way movie music in general is conceived. Any particular thoughts on how that's changing how we listen to things?
The amount of media that people are exposed to now, which needs music, video games, television, both on demand and regular network TV, whatever that means anymore, and film, so much more music is needed. And the idea that the composers who do this music are coming out of a very similar background is basically gone. It used to be composers for film were almost entirely white men. Many of them were your European immigrants coming over from during the war, before the war, and now so many composers for film start out working on video games or working in television, or people in television start out in film. There's no one track anymore. Michael Giacchino is a great example. He's done major, major, major big-budget Hollywood films, several of which have been animated. He's one of the main composers for Pixar, and he's worked on television. Thomas Newman, part of the Newman family dynasty of film composers related to Alfred and Randy and Lionel and David. He also worked in television, but he, has also written some of the most memorable film scores ever, including Shawshank Redemption and American Beauty, as well as the theme to Six Feet Under. So there's no one track anymore for people writing film music or music for media, which means there's really a lot more options for people now.
Daniel Goldmark, thank you very much for joining us.
Oh, it's been a pleasure.
For Current State, I'm Melissa Benmark.